Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
You know, I know all of you are sitting there, no matter how much you may front. There's a part of you that's wondering whether this was a mistake and whether I belong and whether I can do this when I go on this campus or start this program. Am I really worthy of it?
That's First Lady Michelle Obama, our former First Lady, today on Howard University's campus talking about her Reach Higher initiative at the Beating the Odds Summit. The issue, giving first-generation college students the encouragement to finish strong and get that four-year degree. Well, tonight we're talking about the issues that may not occur to first-generation college students or their parents. My guests are Jessica Brown. She is founder of collegegirl.com, Anthony Jones, associate provost and assistant vice president of enrollment management here at Howard University, and Destiny Whittington. She's a first-generation college student at Alabama State University and also a WHUR news intern extraordinaire. She's blushing. Thank you all for coming in. I really appreciate it. I want to, first of all, play a little bit from former First Lady Michelle Obama, because she made some really incredible points today, and we need to put a fine point on why she was here.
You got to learn how to get through transitions, because the best things in life that are waiting for you are going to require you to transition, just like getting from high school to college. And transitioning is practice, right? It's practice getting over those first feelings, those first months of nerves, that those first feelings of I don't even know where I am.
One of the things I find so fascinating, and I really want to start with you, Jessica, what she is talking about are students who have transitioned from high school to college. And the reality is that they are the first people in their entire family to go to college. And the difficulty is that their parents very likely know nothing about college. Talk to me about that.
You know, she talked about transitioning and the whole point of making sure you practice, making sure you have patience while you transition. And Malcolm Jenkins on the panel also made a great point. Sometimes you have to remove that word first generations. At the end of the day, you are a student, just like every other person. So you want to make sure that you, the more you put titles onto things, the more pressure you put on yourself. And when you remove the word first, when you remove the word first generation and all those other titles, you're kind of able to focus. Remember, you're still a student. It's still time to graduate and obtain your goals at the end of the day, just like everybody else. So, but that comes with practice, and that comes with patience and flexibility.
But Anthony, I think the reality is that for so many students there, whether they're taking those first steps onto Howard University's campus or any campus around the country, for a lot of them, this is uncharted space.
Yeah, it is. And I think that colleges and universities are a microcosm of society. They are like people in some sense. They have personalities. They have culture. They exist in a space. And so when a student hits a campus, it begins a relationship. And that relationship is new. And like former First Lady Michelle Obama said, it takes some time to get adjusted. It's that period of time where we can either win a student or we can lose a student. And so as a college administrator, the thing that I'm conscious of is what are we doing to try to win that student's heart when they arrive on our respective college campus? And there are some of us that, frankly, spend a lot of time trying to get that right, and we do a good job. But unfortunately, there are some institutions out there that just simply do not. And we find a lot of our students that just don't make it through that process with those schools.
And Destiny, talk to me about your story briefly. You are the first person in your family to go to college. What was that decision like? And what was it like for the family when you were taking those first steps?
I think it was a really good experience because growing up in D.C., higher education has always been pushed. Any school I've been in, whether it was middle school, high school, elementary school, they always had a program where we're focusing on getting to college. That was the main goal. So when I first decided to go to Alabama State, the first thing I found was an alumni chapter. I think that's really important for students to look at because, like everyone said about transitioning, you need that bridge to get you over there. You know, you can't just expect to get to your first fall semester of undergrad and think that, you know, you're going to be empty-handed or, you know, you're not going to have any guidance. I think pre-professional programs, like I said, like alumni chapters or summer bridge programs, those are really helpful. Those really help the student, like he said, really help the student build a family and build a connection on the university when they get to campus.
What was the thing that surprised you the most when you got to school that first freshman semester?
The thing that surprised me the most was definitely culture. I had a culture shock when I first got to Alabama.
Yeah, that's not D.C. I've been to Montgomery. That's not D.C.
Yeah. Things were definitely a lot slower. I learned very quickly that mannerisms are important to, like, you know, like Southern culture. They really take that seriously. So, you know, using proper terms like yes, ma'am, and no, sir. Those are things that weigh very heavily on their heart. So, you know, me being somebody from the inner city, you know, I'm not used to telling people who are, you know, not of seniority of like 50 plus, you know, I'm not used to telling a 30-year-old woman, yes, ma'am, you know, yes, yes.
Makes sense, yeah.
And, you know, that came as a shock to me when people were coming to me and told me at first I was disrespectful because I thought I was just, you know, being myself. And I realized, you know, when you're in someone else's atmosphere, when you're in another ball field, you know, you have to learn how to play their game if you want to be successful.
Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about first-generation college students, some of the challenges that they may face as they move from high school to college, all of this coming on the heels of the appearance today at Howard University by former First Lady Michelle Obama, talking about her Reach Higher initiative at the Beating the Odds Summit. Also, combining that with the Common App. We're going to talk about that in just a bit. But let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Denise calling from Gaithersburg. Hey, Denise, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
You know, I really liked the young lady who was talking about how she went to Alabama. It was, I'm originally from New York, and I tell you what, it was a culture shock for me, too. This is mine. My parents both worked very, very hard, but we came from a very low-income family. What was shocking for me as a young person coming out of high school was I put in my application, proudly thought I was going to get money from what was called tuition assistance back then, thinking that it was going to take care of my tuition, and they sent me back $100.
Mm.
And $100 was devastating for me, which kind of took away my thunder, my feeling, my drive. And so I ended up joining the military. And it was the military who gave me my education to the point of at least getting a baccalaureate degree. I was the first person in my family to get a master's degree, which I think sometimes we don't feel like we can achieve things, and we have to take things sometimes in baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when I first went in the military and I got an associate's degree through the Air Force's college. And from there, I pursued my baccalaureate degree. The challenges there is in the military, you tend to move around a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't until I actually retired from the military that I actually was able to complete my baccalaureate degree.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us, Denise, and certainly we salute not only your service, but also your educational pursuit. So thank you so much for sharing with us. You know, one of the things, and Anthony, I didn't ask you this beforehand, did your parents go to college?
They did not.
So when you went to Fisk,
I did.
What was that like? Were they able to give you any information, you know, at all? How was that? Because a lot of these young people that are coming into college who who are first generation, they don't have the help that someone like me, I'm second generation HBCU. My daughter's a student here at Howard. She's third generation HBCU. We got the village, we got the neighborhood, we got the whole city. You know, she's moving into the dorms. She got 12 people there helping her with the dorms.
Sure.
But, you know, that's a hard transition for someone who doesn't have that kind of blessed background.
Well, you know, you hit on it when you use the word neighborhood. I was fortunate to come from a neighborhood where there were a number of folk in and around my community who were educated and were educators. I was fortunate to be taught by several of my parents, former teachers. There were teachers in my church. There were my doctor happened to look like me. So being from South Louisiana, I was exposed to education all around. Now, I was also in a family where there were educated folk. My parents just happened to be those entrepreneurs in the family. So they did well for themselves, and they found a way to do that through business. So what they could not necessarily give me in terms of a roadmap into college, what they did provide for me were two things. One, it was access to this community, and the community really sent me to school, right? I remember a conversation with a very respected man in my community, a Mr. Bell, who was himself a third-generation college-educated black man and had been very prized in our community about what he had accomplished. He stopped me one day and just simply asked, well, what are you going to do next year?
How about that? Mm-hmm.
And as I began to describe it, he then went on and finished my sentence, and then you're going to do this, and then you're going to do that. So they gave me that as parents. But what they also gave me was just this simple word, and I heard it in our caller's story, persistence.
Right.
And for any first-generation college student, that's why I so admire our young student here we have here today, if persistence is not a part of it, then you simply won't survive. And my parents gave me that sense of persistence. Getting on that campus, I knew that I had 4 years to get it done. In fact, my dad, when he put money in my hand to go to college, he told me, he said, you got 4 years to do it. He said, you don't come back. He said, I want every dime that I've spent on you, right? So I think those were the two things that my parents gave me, even though they were not college generation, had college in their particular background.
Justin, you want to say something? Yeah.
You know, having a nonprofit in the city of Washington, D.C., persistence, yes, you have to have that. You have to be consistent. You have to be persistent. Mm-hmm. You have to be focused. You have to be driven. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it is so hard for some of these students that I personally deal with, because as much as we can try to pour in these resources, like back when you were coming up and probably back when I was coming up, it took a village really to raise a child. Mm-hmm. And nowadays our neighbors aren't asking us questions. They're not pouring into us about going to college and wanting to know where we're going. Like just how you said, you had all these teachers and everywhere in your community, your church, your neighborhood, everywhere. And now the times are so different, you know, and these kids are really on their own. And it's so important for them to really begin to, like you said, that persistence is so hard to develop if you've never seen it before. So it's so important for us to, like Michelle Obama said at the summit, to begin to give back and begin to mentor, no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are, no matter if you have money, if you don't have money, we have to begin back to pour our resources back into our youth.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about first generation college students, what they may not necessarily know, or their parents, as they begin that first year in college, leaving high school and heading into that first semester freshman year. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ron, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Ron. What's on your mind?
Well, I was first generation to go to college, too.
Where did you go?
I went to HBCU. I went to Virginia State.
Okay.
It was the greatest time of my life. It enabled me to become the adult that I am today. It gave me a sense of independence, responsibility, and I had a ball.
I'm sure. we don't want to forget that. Yeah.
All and anybody to experience college one time in their life. It, it'll, like it or not, it will be the greatest experience that they could ever encounter at a young age.
Ron, let me ask you, because if you were the first in your family, what kind of challenges did you encounter when, because there were, I'm sure there was a lot that you did not know.
Well, the first challenge was I had to wake up and go to class and be responsible for everything myself. I had nobody there to push me or scold me. I had to develop responsibilities, schedules, get classes, get there and back. I had to become an adult.
Mm. That's a really interesting point. And to put a finer point on that, because you really struck, you really touched something that former First Lady Michelle Obama said earlier today, and it's ironic that you should mention it.
So go to class. Let me just say that. Go to class. Basic, simple thing. Don't think that you can figure it out at the end of the semester if you haven't gone to class. Just get up, go to class. You paid for it. Use it, sit in the class. Ask for help. Don't wait. Get to know the professor. Get to know the TA. Get used to speaking up. Raise your hand. Say something. Ask a question. Don't think that you're supposed to know. You're not.
Ron, thank you so much for your sage comments. There you go. I appreciate that. There you go. Destiny, difficult for you to get up and go to class that first semester?
I'm not even going to say it was difficult at first. Anyone who knows me personally knows I'm not the most punctual, but because I was too afraid to let people down, you know, I made that effort to make sure I went to class. And, you know, if I wasn't there at the start, you know, I was no later than 15 minutes, you know. So I was always making sure that I was there. I was one of those people with the schedule. I have the planner. I have the calendar. I have the Google Docs set up. Like, I am ready to go. Like, that is definitely something I take good pride in, is definitely being in class. But I will say, like everyone else has mentioned, the challenges, one of the most important challenges I've reached was finances. Like, not even not having the money to go there, but to constantly keep your parents updated on, hey, I need the taxes done, or, you know, DC tag mm-hmm. is coming up, you know, DC cap is coming up. You know, those things really matter, especially for first generation students. When you're looking for that type of funding, you know, your parents, although they might have not went to school or not went to school immediately after high school, you know, it's important that you all have that understanding that, you know, it's not just me. You know, mm-hmm. Everyone has to be, you know, everyone has to be hands on deck. Everybody has to be involved. So I think that was one of the biggest challenges, was trying to make sure that my parents were involved. And it wasn't hard to get them involved, but still, you know, you don't want to bother a mom who's, you know, working for her family, trying to make sure everyone's okay. You know, you don't want to be the last person stressing her out about some paperwork at the end of the day, you know. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I want to comment a little bit more about the money piece on the other side of this break. And also, Jessica, I'll let you make your point as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about first-generation college students, some of the challenges that they face, and what parents need to know as they transition from high school to college. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about first-generation college students. Former First Lady Michelle Obama was on Howard University's campus today. She was talking about her Reach Higher initiative at the Beating the Odds Summit. And the issue was giving first-generation college students a pep talk, encouragement, to get their four-year degree, even if no one else in their family has done it before. Well, my guests tonight are Jessica Brown, founder of collegegirl.com, Anthony Jones, associate provost and assistant vice president of enrollment management at Howard University, and Destiny Whittington, first-generation college student at Alabama State University. She is also one of our wonderful WHUR news team interns. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, Jessica, you want to make a comment? Please go right ahead.
What I wanted to say is how you said you're first generation, you need the taxes and things like that. Those things are so important. And us as African Americans, like, we don't want to give up our bank information. We don't do our taxes on time. But if you have a child that's going off to college, your child's finances and college education depends on you filling out that free application for federal student aid, which is also known as the FAFSA. And in order to do that successfully, you must complete your taxes. You must give your child your tax information. You guys are in this together. You know, I feel like in our community, we're so busy pushing our kids to go to college, but we're not having this conversation on how to pay for it. And we're waiting until the last minute to find resources, and that's why we're getting in more debt. And just to let you know, a quick statistic is black women hold the most student loan debt in America. Mm. And currently, student loan debt is more than credit card debt at $1.5 trillion. And us being, many of us being first generation college students, there's a plethora of scholarships out here, but we're not applying for them. We're not submitting our FAFSA on time. We're not giving up our financial information.
Give us the FAFSA piece, because again, you got to remember, we want to make sure that there are a whole lot of people that are listening right now, mm-hmm. first generation, second generation. Everybody went to college. Folks born coming right out of college. But then you've got some other folks, and they say, FAFSA what?
Right. So the FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. It is available every year on October 1st. And the way financial aid works is first come, first serve. So as long as you submit that FAFSA successfully and upload your tax information, you and your child have your federal student aid IDs and complete the application together, you'll be able to find out how much money an institution is going to give you beforehand. But if you wait till the last minute, then you won't have any resources. So you're going to have to depend on student loans, private loans, all these things that are based off of your credit. So I would strongly encourage you all to make sure you do your research on the free application for federal student aid. Every state has a deadline. For instance, Maryland is March 1st. And of course, with DC TAG and DC CAP, you have to make sure the taxes are done for those additional grants and scholarships. So this whole college piece is all about working together. You have to be transparent with your child. Let your child know if you haven't saved anything. That's okay, because that's realistic. That's almost every American in America. Nobody has saved any money for college because they're all living paycheck to paycheck. So knowing that, how do we get our stuff done early so we can figure out what our shortfall is? And how do we work together to find scholarships collectively to make sure we're not overborrowing in student loans?
I'm sure there was a conversation about the Common App today. You wanted to share something with me, Anthony?
Yeah, also. Just real quickly. I think I love the points that's been made. And I would remind our audience that college costs continue to rise. Colleges and universities are incentivized to increase their cost year over year. Unlike the business world, colleges are not regulated around cost. Mm-hmm. And so as they work to try to meet of the student market and try to compete for more and more students, they have to come up with ideas that cost money in order to keep those students in seats. And so parents and students have to understand, as was just brought it out by Ms. Brown, that this is a competitive market that they've got to get into and get engaged. It's not a hand-me-out kind of situation. Colleges expect to be paid, and there is money out there in order to do it.
Yes.
Talk to me before I go back to the phone lines about the Common App, because a lot of there's yet another thing that not only students need to know about, parents need to know as well.
The Common App makes it really easy for students and families to apply to college. I mean, most universities now, back in the day, weren't really on the Common Application. But now, as long as your transcript is uploaded, your test scores, your recommendations, all those things can be sent off to all the schools that you check off. And everybody is going to use that same centralized database to view your profile. So, and speaking of that, following up with your counselors on their end to make sure that your stuff is in. Because I have so many students who rely on, oh yeah, everything's in the Common App. Months later, they never got an admissions acceptance from the schools they thought they applied to.
You're talking about high school counselors.
High school counselors have not uploaded their things in the Common App. So everybody has to collectively work together. You have to follow up with every single person that's involved in this college process, your parent, your high school counselor, your principal, to make sure that everything is in and submitted on time for you to get that money.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jennifer calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jennifer. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. This is Jennifer Jones, and I am just excited by this conversation that you're having. And I want to tell my fellow Louisiana natives, the provost and Ms. Brown, that I have a beautiful space right on Capitol Hill that I would love for the TIS Foundation to sponsor some activities to support young people, whether they are at Howard University or they are students in school here in the region, because in Louisiana, I don't know if they just put it in the water, but we have such a pride and a spirit about getting our education, about going to college, and about going off and out into the world to succeed. College isn't the only way, but it's definitely an important one. So I would like to just extend the TIS Foundation and some of the work that a circle of women and I do silently called Mission 50, where we make donations to individuals who are doing beautiful work, and we show up and provide resources and support. And so Saturdays, evenings, weekends, we have this beautiful space that I would love to extend. If there's programs for leadership training, all of the things that I have access to.
Well, Jennifer, let me stop you, because I know you, and I only have a few more minutes for this show, like 30. So I need to... Because Jennifer could talk forever, but I need I have your information, and I'll make sure that I share it with my guests here on the program before they leave.
And so, I certainly want to thank the TIS Foundation. They recently gave Howard over $250,000 in scholarship aid, and in fact, I was there to accept the check. So thank you very much, TIS Foundation. We appreciate that.
Well, then you call Jennifer.
But Jennifer made a wonderful point that kind of piggybacked off of what Michelle Obama and one of the students asked her today about academic success is such a small fraction, right? Just because you're going to college, yes, you're getting an A, but that's not all people want to see, that you're getting all A's. So making sure when you're going to college, you're utilizing all the resources, you're joining clubs, you know, because this is what you're paying for. You're not paying just to go to school. You're paying for a network. You're paying for experience. You're paying for your professional recommendations in the future. So I just think that was a wonderful point that Jennifer brought up. Like, it's so much more than academics.
And can I just address an interesting cultural piece that I found when working with first-generation college families? When that student goes off to school and they start acquiring all of this new knowledge and experience, I'm thinking about now what you said about getting involved in clubs and organizations, which is spot on. Sometimes there is a hesitance in that family to support that student through the rest of the 4 years because they're becoming different.
Yeah.
Their language is becoming different. Their perspectives are becoming different. The exposure is becoming different. And there's a different conversation that starts happening in the family. And we have literally had students get to their junior year and they say, oh, mama doesn't want to do the taxes anymore. Or give me the taxes.
They want to know why. Because the child is now no longer giving them their refunds anymore. Mm. That's another great piece that Ms. Obama brought up today.
And I have something about that, as a matter of fact. But Jennifer, good to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling in. And I'm sure my guests will have a chance to follow up. Before I get to that piece that you were just talking about, Jessica, I want to hear from Diana calling from Lorton. Diana, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Diana, are you there? Diana, give me a call back if you have a chance. We'll definitely take your call. Also, we have, I believe it is Jemica calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, it's actually Jemica.
Jemica.
And I had two quick questions.
Sure.
Destiny, I don't know if you remember me from when you were student rep at the State Board of Education.
I do.
I'm very proud of you, sweetie. When I heard you on the radio, I got really excited. Not surprised, but very proud of you. You're doing amazing, and just wanted to kind of give you that little shout-out. But to several points that Jessica has made, like, you know, about, you know, kids who didn't have that support, whose family didn't want to give the information, whose families didn't want to give that tax deduction. That was my reality, so much so that I became a runaway at 16 and entered the workforce at 14, often holding down two and three jobs, being on my own and taking care of younger siblings. I had the potential and the intellect to have gone to college, but that just was not my reality. So I'm really thankful for this conversation, and that, you know, that these conversations are being had, and that these challenges are being understood and exposed. Because back when I was coming up, you know, to be a foster kid, to be a runaway was taboo. The administrators didn't want to touch it. The principals didn't want to touch it. The counselors didn't want to touch it. You know, so it was just, you know, it was a shock that I even graduated. Not the fact that I ran track, played basketball, played the violin.
Jemica, you said you had two questions. Jemica, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, you said you had two questions. What are your questions?
No, I said 2 points. I was,
oh, 2 points. Oh, okay. I thought you had two questions.
Yeah. And then piggybacking on Jessica's points.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing, and thank you so much for calling in and supporting Destiny. She's doing fine.
we are
proud of her, too. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing with us. I want to go back to this money piece that Jessica brought up, and our former First Lady, Michelle Obama, also brought up. And I think this is such a critical piece.
Yeah, when you get your loan check, they're going to give you a check. It might be $10,000, might be $15,000, right? And it's tempting to think that money is yours and that you can use it to help everybody, right? Well, first of all, it's not used to help everybody, and it's not used to pay for a stereo system and those bad shoes and those nice nails. You know, in college, you are broke. You don't have extra money. It may feel like extra money, but it's not. Because if you spend it on something other than your books or your tuition or your food and you run out, they're not going to be like, oh, here's a little bit more.
I remember when I was an undergrad at Morgan State in Baltimore, and I remember watching some of my, you know, my colleagues. And, you know, I got a student loan, but, you know, I was lucky. I was in state, but I lived off campus. So, my tuition wasn't as high as, you know, some of those guys coming from Philadelphia and Atlanta, where they were, you know, out of state fees, living on campus, eating on campus, and the whole bit. And unfortunately, some of those guys and some of those gals, they got that check and they lost their minds. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, some of them weren't able to finish school. Mm-hmm. Because, like the former First Lady just said, $10,000, $5,000, mm-hmm. That's the biggest check that a lot of young people have ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it is written to you, Jessica Brown.
Yes, indeed.
It is written to you, not to your mom, not to your dad. And, you know, temptation is really, really difficult. You know, what advice, Anthony, do you give to the parents that don't know and to the students that do know? Because like Jessica said, they're not giving back the refund sometimes.
Well, I think the first thing is what you just said, that they have to know. And getting the information on the front end is going to be critical. And I think we talked about that earlier. But here's one thing that's particularly interesting. There's a piece of information that some parents miss. And Jessica, you may address this, I think, in your work. But the Parent Plus loan has mm-hmm. the option whether or not to be assigned to either the parent mm-hmm. or the student, right? And very often, it will go to the student. And what sometimes needs to happen is that the parent needs to retain those dollars and have it go to the parent. Now, with that being said, obviously, and I see the faces of my guests, my fellow guests here, so I'm on uncharted territory.
Yeah, I can't help you here, man. You're
exactly,
on your own,
exactly.
Right?
So there are some nuances and some things that definitely need to be taken into consideration, but I think parents need to understand that. Here's the bottom line for me when it comes to this, and that is that this is an investment.
Yes.
It is, at the end of the day, it is an investment. And what I get nervous about personally when it comes to talking about student loans is that we have a culture now that is shying away from borrowing. But the reality is that, as I mentioned earlier, college costs are not shrinking.
Right.
And what is available to people in order to afford that college education largely has to do with this loan space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily something that I think that we ought to fear, but something that we ought to try our best to be able to understand. And that's the piece that I encourage parents to do, is get information about this. But I certainly want to give room for my table mates here to chime in.
Go ahead, Destiny, and then Jessica.
Well, as a current college student and somebody who happens to work in financial aid as well as my work study, I definitely understand where you're coming from as far as administration. But for students, I feel like, you know, when you get that refund check, I personally have never received a refund check my entire college career. But I do know, understanding, like, you know, students, they have to pay for books coming out of pocket and, you know, running back to mom and dad asking them, oh, I need $250 for a biology book when I'm a journalism major. You know, they're going to look at you crazy. So it's like, you know, with those refunds, it might seem like a lot because, like Harold said, you know, that's the most money they've ever seen personally in their hands. So it's like, you know, they might get overwhelmed. They might do things like, oh, buy a car, or like Michelle Obama said, get their nails done, buy those shoes. But at the end of the day, they do understand that they do have to buy certain resources for class. And not only that, but just to live a little. You know, we go to school to get an education. And like Ms. Jessica said, not only network, but to get the experience. And, you know, you can't do a lot of things without money nowadays. Now, going to college, you should have some type of financial responsibility. You should know not to blow through all your money. You should understand that if you are given $5,000 from a refund or $10,000 for a refund, it might be wise to give your parent half of that back and then use the other half for school accolades and things of that nature. You know, you don't want to overcompensate, because when you decide to keep spending and you forget the amount of money you have and you run out, you know, no one's going to be able to give you a handout. So
that is assuming that $5,000 or $10,000
was used wisely.
Well, I mean, if your semester fees are $10,000 and you get a $10,000 loan check, you can't send anybody anything,
right?
You know, Jessica, go right ahead.
You know, I have to play devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. I put myself in both shoes. One, for educated parents, they know the Parent PLUS loan. They know they can check it off and it can go to them. Mm. But how many educated parents are saving that money? Mm. I know a lot of them that have used it to buy water heaters, that have used it to buy vacations. So when summer school starts and their child needs to actually take a summer school course,
That must be paid for
yes, by the loans that they receive, because they can't exceed their cost of attendance because they've received a refund. That money is gone. Mm. Now you have, on the other flip side, you have, unfortunately, maybe the uneducated parent, where the student is more educated than the parent and is filling out the Parent PLUS using their information. So, of course, the student's going to check off for the refund to come back to them.
Right.
Now, sometimes the issue becomes that student has to pay bills back home. Because,
which was what, and that's what Michelle Obama was saying today, you know, and that's the conundrum,
right? Or some of these students, even if they don't have to pay bills at home, right now we live in a social media world. You know, we have to have a certain look. You know, going to Howard, you had to have the best wigs, best shoes, best everything.
I had to have the best wigs.
I mean, you just know when homecoming comes, those refunds hit, and we have to now educate ourselves financially on how to just be smart, in general, how to is beyond loans at this point, how to personally budget, how to save for an emergency. emergency fund, how to make sure that whatever loans we are taking, we're using it for our needs and our necessities. Like if you have to get home back to Atlanta, that's what it's supposed to be used for, not to live this flamboyant life. So I just think we have to be more financially educated and responsible. And maybe our institutions, I honestly feel like being in a financial aid space should do a better job on that, because you just have kids like, look, this is your balance in financial aid. This is your balance. This is what has to be paid. Find whatever loan you need to pay it. That's not the way to go. We need to be teaching our students, look, if you borrow this much money, this is how much money you're going to have to repay back. So how can we put more resources on our campus, whether that's financial education, scholarships, opportunities for our students to apply for, so this way they can obtain financial freedom?
How can parents who have no earthly idea what college is about educate themselves on their own, short of enrolling?
I personally think that, you know, if you want to know anything, if you want to learn anything, you have to take those first steps into encouraging yourself to go find out information. If you care about your child enough to enroll them in the college, you should care enough to know, to learn the lifestyle, to understand what type of dates are coming up, fees are coming up. You know, if they're winning accolades, you know, come down and participate in them winning their awards, you know, or if they're crossing things at their organization, you come and entertain, you know, you come and support them, you know. Because just because you're a parent and you never experienced college doesn't mean you still can't get that college experience with your child, you know. I really feel like people should not think of college so negatively and think of it more as an experience. Think of it more as something we're moving forward, you know. It's not always, like Ms. Jessica said at the beginning, like first generation that puts a negative tone on things. Like, when this can be a brand new experience, you know, this is something that people look at as to, okay, if I'm going to college, then I'm destined to make it somewhere, allegedly. So, you know, we have to work together as a unit to see the benefits of college and not only look at it as, oh, it's a financial burden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, this generation, thankfully, has more access to information than any other generation that's existed. Mm-hmm. And so what is out there to understand what college is and the college process is quite detailed. It is handheld information that is out there. And it is also upon the responsibility of the respective institutions, to your point earlier, mm-hmm. Jessica, to help those families understand the process as well. So you've got schools reaching out to parents saying, here's how it goes, here's how it works. I'm not at the point where I'll say that there's no excuses,
right,
but we're coming pretty close, mm-hmm. in terms of what you ought to know, right, that's out there, right? And then, of course, you have great authors like my guest panel.
And Jessica, and I'd be remiss, because I wanted to ask you, kind of give me a brief rundown of what you're doing with these students that are in the transition. Talk to me about not only what you're doing, but what are they telling you, those first-generation college students? What are their concerns, and what are you hearing from them?
You know, what I hear is, oh, Miss Jessica, I don't know. And it bothers me. How do you not know when the world is at your fingertips? Back when I was going to college, piggyback off, you know, my guest panelists, is that my mom had to print out stuff, scholarships. We had to fill it out, mail it, send it, and hope they got it. You know, now you're living in a world where if I want to find out my size shoe from here to New Jersey, Jordans, the 9, 11s, whatever number is out, these kids can give me every store from here to New Jersey that has my shoe size, but you cannot tell me where to find scholarships. And every year, over $100 million in scholarship goes unclaimed. Mm-hmm. So we have to stop scrolling and start doing. Like, we know how to do research. We research the things we want to research. Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing with these students, the tours and the like? Talk to me about what you're trying to inform them about.
So, of course, I'm an author of the book How to Pay for College When You're Broke, and I also have a nonprofit that's based in Washington, D.C., that exposes local high school students to different colleges, careers, mentoring, and scholarship opportunities. And what I do is I pick over 25 students from the DMV area. I take them on four-day college tours. I mentor them every month. We do different programs, and I give them scholarships when they graduate to encourage them to want to give back and making sure that they are exercising all their resources and know that I've created this village for all of us to succeed, and it's up to us to continue to create more villages within our communities to make sure we all win.
What is the thing that surprises you about what they don't know or what they need to know as they begin this transition?
It just surprised. Well, the money piece. The money piece is the biggest factor of college. I mean, some of these institutions currently around us are $70,000 a year for undergraduate degree, and it's the money piece. However, it's them really putting the time in to find the money to make sure that they are able to secure their education. So that's what they don't know, and they actually know it, but they don't want to do the research for it. So right now, I think we have to go back to the basics with our youth and instilling the importance of research and finding opportunities. That's one thing Howard taught me. Howard taught me how to be a hustler, how to find my own resources, and how to make sure I stayed on top of my game. And I think that's what we have to instill into our youth to make sure that they find the answers to their own questions, so they can be successful.
Anthony, what's the thing when you got to Fisk your first freshman semester that either surprised you or that you didn't know that no one could tell you prior to getting there?
I think it was how many students had a similar experience to me. You know, okay. You arrive on a college campus and you sort of think that you're a lonely only. Maybe no one talks like me, or no one was where I was in my experience in my class, or no one likes the type of music that I like. And then you start meeting people who are very much like you. I was fortunate to be graduate very well in high school. I was elected top of this and top of that, and I was very thankful. And so when I went to Fisk, I assumed that I was sort of at the top.
And did you realize?
And I was not at the top.
You were a regular Joe.
I was a regular guy. Everybody's at the top.
Yeah.
But that obviously motivates you, right?
Right.
It pulls something out of you that is deep down there. And I think that is a part of that transformational process that happens on a college campus that college is so known for, is really kind of creating something out of you that you really did not know existed. So I'm very thankful for the undergraduate experience that I had.
The one thing, and this is a personal story. Before the program, I was telling Anthony, my daughter has one more year here, and when we spoke earlier about the growth and the change that happens after that first freshman semester, your child comes back a completely or partially different person. And I would say this to those parents that are concerned about that. Last year when, my daughter, she got her first job, because in high school she didn't work. She studied most of the time. But when, during the summer and during the winter breaks, she worked. And I will never forget, it was probably one of the most touching and significant things that she had ever said to me. She didn't have direct deposit, so I had to pick up her check, because she was already here on campus. And she got two checks equaling, about almost $1,300. And I said, "Wow, sweetie," I'm on the phone with her, and I said, you got a lot of money here. And when I told her how much it was, the first thing that came out of her mouth was, "Oh, thank God, I can buy my books." Mm. And not, "I can go shopping," not that I can go get my hair done, but she said, "I can buy my books," because you realize the pressure that is put on parents.
Mm-hmm.
Even those parents that know what it means mm-hmm. to go to college and the expense. And she's at work now, so I hope she says the same thing for this fall semester.
You better hope.
Let us hope so. Let me hear it again. Buy those books, sweetie. You got one more year. Listen, I want to thank all of you for talking to us. Jessica Brown, Anthony Jones, and Destiny Whittington. Destiny, so proud of you. We're going to have to get some more scripts for you to write. thanks for talking to us. And, of course, information about tonight's discussion will be on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30. That is The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, July 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.